You're listening to The Bouquet Toss, the podcast that helps you plan your day your way by helping you figure out what to keep and what to toss from your wedding day plans. This season on The Bouquet Toss, we are both posing and attempting to answer the question, why weddings? There's no denying that weddings can be stressful and overwhelming, but they can also be a really powerful way to recognize how important your relationships really are, not just with your spouse, but your family and your friends as well.
Absolutely. The ups and downs of wedding planning can certainly take you for a ride. Once you jump in, it gets pretty easy to want to vent about all of those downs, like the expense or the stress or the overwhelm. So we want to take a minute to take a look at the ups and recognize how weddings can actually strengthen relationships in a lot of cases.
Today, we are speaking with Leah Weinberg, former wedding planner and author of The Wedding Roller Coaster.
After nearly a decade in the wedding industry as the owner of ColourPop Events, Leah is returning to her roots as an attorney to assist her former colleagues in the events industry, along with other entrepreneurs and business owners as the co-founder of Odenberg Law. You guys might remember we spoke to her other half, Kumbi, this season as well. Leah's work and insights have been published online and in print with Vogue, The New York Times, People, CNN, CNBC, Bravo, Martha Stewart, and The Knot, among others. So she knows a thing or two. We're really excited to have her today. So welcome, Leah.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this topic and appreciate that you want to talk about the ups today, not focus on the downs.
Amazing. So to get started, we want to know what inspired you to write your book, The Wedding Roller Coaster, kind of like spill the tea on why you felt the world needed help navigating the relationship challenges that come with wedding planning.
Yeah, the book was actually born out of a single conversation. I tell the whole story in the book, but I was on a site visit with a bride. We were taking the train upstate and taking it back. And on the way back, she was sharing with me that she and her dad were having a really awful fight at the moment. And ordinarily, like, her family is super close. She talks to her parents on a daily basis. And like, she and her dad were not on speaking terms at that particular moment because there had been an argument over the food that was being served at the wedding. And so she was very upset. And in that moment, I found myself just trying to help her figure out what was going on, how to deal with the situation. I kind of explained that, like, it wasn't about the food. It's funny, I call the story, it's not about the fried chicken, because it was an argument about fried chicken. And I'm like, the fried chicken was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. Like, it's not about that. It's about the fact that you're his only daughter, the youngest of the two kids, and he's having some feelings about his baby girl going off and getting married. And like a lot of people, if you don't know how to really express how you're feeling, it comes out in a not always pleasant way. And so I was thinking back later about that conversation. I was like, wow, I was pretty impressed with myself for coming up with that insight on the fly, but it let me think about all the stuff that I had seen over the years and wedding planning and similar situations and understanding just the sort of unique psychological components to wedding planning. And so that was actually 2017. And I started like slowly putting pen to paper after that, but it really wasn't until 2020. And I didn't have any weddings going on. So I finally had the time and space to actually write the book. And so I wrote the book in 2020 and it came out in April of 2021.
So cool. I think that's awesome that, I mean, first of all, yeah, no shade to fried chicken, but that's a really good reminder to hear, because there are little details like that that I think everyone experiences, like something goes off, right? Because of like these tiny little things. And it's because they represent bigger things. Right. And I think it's something like I definitely think experience myself is that before you get married or before you get engaged, there's always this feeling of like, you know, how do you know you're ready to get married? And like, how do you and your partner assess that? And I think that however you come to that, there's still a level of learning that happens in the like actual planning part with you and your partner and with your families that I think you kind of maybe expect to have happened just because the decision was made to get married. But until that happens, you don't really go through some of these things and you learn so much in that time.
Yeah.
And especially you learn how everybody else outside of you and your partner feel about what is happening. I see you nodding. So
yes, that's a lot of the learning process, honestly, is learning about that and being very surprised by things that your friends and family and community might feel very strongly about. There was a few things happened in, like with multiple couples in terms of families kind of certain religious aspects being very important to ceremonies that caught the couple completely off guard and required us to do like a whole workaround situation in terms of how we were doing things. And so, yeah, you and your partner hopefully have a very solid foundation. But when you are bringing in a lot of all of these other voices, it just becomes, it can become a lot and challenging to navigate.
Yeah, I also think weddings are, I mean, that's why we have an entire podcast about this, right? Like, weddings are something that are so subjective. They're different for every person. It's a very personal thing. And that also goes for, like, the generations that you have around you that experienced weddings differently than you did and even than you do now. And so you and your partner can be really clear on what this day looks like, what you imagine, what you really want. But then you don't have those conversations usually with everyone else until you decide to do it. And then it's like, oh, I had no idea that you felt this strongly about, you know, doing this tradition. Or, and at the end of the day, this I do think has become the theme of this season, is that like your wedding is not just for you and your partner, it's for everyone. And even if you're not doing a big ceremony, even if the two of you are going to the courthouse, the change that is coming from joining the two of you and how that affects the people around you is just much larger than just the two of you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think that also this idea of your community being involved in your wedding is something I certainly didn't think about before I started planning. In one way, it's a really beautiful way to look at it because you're kind of saying, I want everyone that I love and that loves us to like witness this moment and help us move into this new chapter together. But when you're initially thinking about those plans, it's all like the only way to make decisions about everything is to be like really internally to yourself. Like, well, what is it that we want? What is it that, you know, we think is important? And then the second other opinions come in, it just gets hard to navigate. It makes you realize so much more like how important the community is to you and the person you love.
Yeah, I see a lot when I was still wedding planning. A common theme was very much the people getting married, their desire to like really provide an experience for everybody attending the wedding, to really take care of everybody for the wedding. There was just this level of hospitality that was so interesting. And one of the things I always said, because when I got married before I got into the business, which I will be grateful for every day of my life. Because I've seen people get married while working in the wedding industry and the amount of pressure that gets put on them and that they put on themselves. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. So I was grateful to get married beforehand. But one of the things I realized from doing that I always reiterated to my couples was there are so few occasions in your life where you get to have all of your favorite people in one room together celebrating you. And it's just really, really special. And so I really appreciate the idea of the people who want to focus on using their wedding kind of as a way to thank all of these people for having been in their life and all of the support that they've given them, and just really honor them as well as focusing on the wedding itself.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, that's like heartwarming for me right now. I'm sitting here like,
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a huge part of wedding planning that feels like invasive for other people. Like, you're like, I don't want to put this on other people. I don't want to make them travel or make them spend X amount of money, or, you know, especially like bridal parties. It's like, you know, I don't want to make them take this trip or celebrate this thing or whatever. But when you do kind of take a step back, when else do you like have this excuse to do that?
Mm-hmm.
It's such a special thing.
Yeah. It gives everybody a reason to make the time.
Yeah.
To be present for those things.
For yes. Sure. It's like we talk constantly about, you know, using your values in your wedding planning. And that obviously includes like inviting the people who you value most in your life and them accepting those invitations and showing up for you and celebrating with you confirms that they also value that relationship.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of that, like, in what ways do you feel like you've seen like the wedding planning process help couples involve and like engage their families and friends and their community in a meaningful way?
Yeah, I've seen it in a few different contexts. I mean, one context, the wedding itself, even though it ultimately didn't result in an invitation to the wedding of an estranged parent, it is what spurred one of the marriers to start trying to heal a relationship with an estranged mm-hmm. parent. The couple who had the fried chicken story, like they literally told me the day of the wedding, like the mom was like, thank you for, it was a little dramatic, but she was like, thank you for saving our family.
Oh my goodness.
Like helping them just to kind of like navigate that type of conflict that I don't think they've seen in their dynamic before. They really appreciated that. But yeah, it has the ability to bring people closer, to bring the people getting married closer to the members of their wedding party. And I hope that people, I mean, we have to be honest, it also has the ability to drive people apart. Like we've yes. all seen that happen. But we want to encourage folks to set those intentions at the beginning. Like you said, understand the values, understand the purpose for your wedding. What do you want to get out of the wedding? Communicate that to the people around you. And that way you can all sort of be pouring into this same idea and all be on the same page, because we want a wedding to bring people together. We don't want it to cause the conflict, but it really takes some intentionality and some planning and thoughtfulness in order to do that, because it is so stressful. Like the default position is like, angry, stressed, tired, overwhelmed. But going in with like a plan and some thoughtfulness will really go a long way.
Yeah, I really like to think about, because even as a guest myself, like I've been to weddings where I maybe like I'm going with my fiance and he knows the people and I don't. And even like after the end of the wedding, I feel like I know these people. And I am just so excited for that to happen, like with my family. Like I'm so excited. A lot of my like childhood friends haven't seen my parents in like a decade or more, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to be seeing all of them. And my sister has 3 kids and they are like everything to me. And so many of the people going to this wedding will have seen, you know, suffered through me showing them endless pictures and videos of these children, but have never met them. And I'm so excited that they're going to meet them. And like his side of the family, like some of them have met them, but not all. And so I think like that is the thing that gets me through all of the stress. And, you know, like a big thing for me is I'm afraid of like inconveniencing people if they have to get an Uber to get to the place and like we don't have a shuttle and all of this stuff. And that then I take a step back and I'm like, you know what? The important thing is that everyone's going to find a way to be there. And then like that's what the magic is that everybody's going to be in the room together. And yeah, I love it.
Yep.
So, okay, this is obviously we have driven home that this is a great opportunity for relationships, you know, of all shapes and sizes. But when it does come to like the couple planning that wedding, do you have any tips or like any experience with how they can kind of use the wedding planning process to enhance their relationship, like strengthen their bond before getting married?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of therapy. Mm-hmm. So, like therapy counseling is always a great way. I mean, I have so many people always say this. They're like, go and get into therapy when things are good so that you can like have the tools and be better prepared for when things are less good. So that's always helpful. But just, I think acknowledging the significance of the moment with your partner, and also acknowledging, I mean, sometimes you also just have to call a spade and acknowledge sometimes the level of ridiculousness that weddings bring. Like, sometimes you have to say, yes, we are spending a large sum of money on something, but, you know, we're doing this because we want to, again, because we want to gather all of our favorite humans in the same room with us. But having also that thoughtfulness of, like, getting on the same page about what you want, I think there's something to, like, having that kind of goal and shared vision and then seeing it come to life. That is going to be so incredibly special, and bringing the two of you much closer, because it's like, wow, we really did. It's like one of the first big group projects that the two of you might work on together. And so seeing it all come to fruition at the end of the day is going to be incredibly rewarding. And then open and honest communicate, like going in and like being really real about having open and honest communication throughout the process is such a key.
Do you recommend any sort of frequency, perhaps, for couples to set aside time to check in on wedding plans or like assess the state of, you know, the other relationships at play when it comes to the dynamics involving the wedding? Like, what would your advice be around that?
I tend to encourage people to have designated wedding planning time, because if not, it's just going to bleed into everything that you do. And just to keep it from taking over your life, I think it's helpful to try to set those boundaries of like, we're going to do this. Obviously, in busier times, you know, you might need those 2 to 3 time per week work sessions. Like, I feel like at the beginning, it's obviously going to be more work. In the middle, maybe checking in weekly on stuff. Obviously, towards the end, it's a very busy time. And so trying to create boundaries and compartmentalize the time that you're spending wedding planning. And it's kind of whatever feels right for you in terms of frequency and how much you have going on. But I do think it's really helpful to try to set aside separate time and make that a separate piece of your relationship.
I love that.
I also think a cool part about it, like, you know, this, I don't want this to sound like heteronormative, but I think a lot of times women end up doing a lot more of the planning. And even if it's two women getting married or if it's two men, like, there's always somebody in the relationship that people feel like, okay, they're going to be the one doing more. They like care more about the details. And then the other one is kind of along for the ride. And I think even though that can be true and probably is true in a lot of scenarios, I think like it is really cool to then see the person who isn't that designated person come alive with like the things that are important to them, and, you know, kind of realize like, oh, I, you know, maybe I hadn't thought about this, but actually this thing is really important to me. And so I think there's, you know, part of part of navigating your relationship with your partner as you're doing it is, I think, not just making the space for them and being like, okay, what color napkins do you want? Or like being very direct with like, do you want a band or a DJ? But I think doing more like exploration, talking a little bit more creatively, like almost being like, let's imagine this, or like, let's pick this wedding that we went to. Like, what were the things we liked? And like kind of helping to set a picture together, I think is really helpful, because I think a lot of times it becomes very like, if one person has an opinion, the other person feels they need one. But if they don't have one, maybe let them form one first, right? And I think that's really good practice for like the rest of your lives together. And it's something that you just kind of get, if you're intentional about it, you can kind of get that practice, you know, upfront with this. Now, of course, when you're like really close to the actual date, you might not have the time to do this. So this is stuff you do at the beginning of the planning process. But it's a reframe that I really think is helpful.
Yeah, figuring out what those priorities are and what each person cares about and what's really important to them, and making space for them to have those opinions is really important. And not doing things just because they exist. I remember I had a conversation with somebody and they questioned me on the cocktail hour. They're like, why do we have cocktail hour? What purpose does it serve? Do we have to do a cocktail hour? And so it's kind of like, it's generally expected that you go from ceremony to cocktail hour to dinner to dancing. But like, why do we need a cocktail hour if we don't want a cocktail hour? And so don't do what you don't want to do. Is kind of my advice.
I think it's interesting too, because nowadays we're seeing so many people, you know, choosing to be sober and like not serving cocktails maybe at all at their wedding. And I know, you know, I think traditionally the cocktail hour often served as the time to kind of entertain the guests or keep the guests distracted while the couple and their wedding party are taking formal portraits and photos with their families and stuff like that. But we're also seeing a lot more couples doing first looks and getting those formal portraits done ahead of the ceremony so that they have more time to enjoy with their guests at the reception. And so, yeah, I think write your own rules. Do what makes sense for you at the end of the day.
That's so interesting. I've never thought about it that way. And also at this point, it's so the norm. So like if you're going to a venue that does weddings all the time, like it's just it's just part of it. Like there's no option not to do it.
Yep. And that's how caterers, if I was just thinking about it, that's how caterers price their stuff. Like the caterers typically are going to be like, oh, we're going to price for a 1 hour cocktail hour and 4 hours of dinner and dancing.
Right.
And like that's their standard.
Cutting out that cocktail hour is going to save you on your budget, y'all.
Truly.
Just saying.
What a different way to like look at it. But that does then mean like you can't really go. And I don't want to say can't, but you most likely can't go to a traditional venue. You're definitely going to be going more the route of like finding the venue, piecing together the catering, piecing together the stuff, which is great. But and also like giving people permission to do that. I think they're like afraid, and it's like, no, do that. That's a great thing.
Yeah. I'm thinking right now of some of the full service venues that I've worked at and just picturing if anybody goes to them and is like, I don't want to do cocktail hour, like their heads might explode.
Like, excuse me?
Right. They're like, I don't understand. Like,
because they do have a formula and they have, you know, a blueprint that they use in their business to maximize their profit. Not that there's anything wrong with that. They're running a business, right? But it's a formula that they have to make sure that they're earning the money they need to for the use of their property on that, you know, high demand day. So, but yeah, I could totally see them being like, what? My brain is short circuiting because I don't know what to do if we don't do a cocktail hour. Another thing I thought might be interesting to discuss or just kind of throw out there. You know, obviously you might be sitting down with your partner. You might be totally aligned on like your vision, your values, your priorities, everything that you guys want for the day and be making all of these decisions. But of course, when we have these family members, you know, involved, especially from the monetary side of things, that brings in opinions and sometimes a sense of wanting to dictate some of those decisions that are made, rightfully so in certain circumstances. But I would be curious to just discuss like ways that couples can sort of navigate these conversations and maybe like how being so clear on the values that you have and your priorities and the why behind the decisions you are making will help you kind of like explain them to those family members.
I go into this in depth in the book because it's just such a common thing. And then when money gets involved, it becomes even more complicated. And it goes back to what I said about the open and honest communication. And yes, it's going to be uncomfortable to have some of those conversations, especially if somebody's giving you money. You have to essentially ask them, okay, what strings are attached? And obviously you're going to say it much more polite than that. But like, what are your expectations in terms of giving us this money? Do you want, are you expecting to be able to make decisions? Do you want to contribute this towards one specific vendor that you can be involved in the process? And sometimes even there's no outside stakeholders. The people getting married are the ones paying for it, but family still has opinions. And so I think first you and your partner have to get on the same page as to how much of, if the two of you are paying for the wedding, you have to be on the same page as to how much of that outside input you really want to consider or take in, because that's going to inform how you respond to some of the suggestions or requests that you're getting from those people. So it's really a case-by-case thing, but there's ways to, number one, just prepare for you're going to have those conversations, and then prepare the two of you to make sure you're on the same page as to, you know, how much of this input are we going to accept or not. Have that plan going in will be helpful.
Such great advice. I love that.
Having difficult conversations with family members about your wedding plans seems to be inevitable. So as we continue exploring how best to navigate those, we also have to acknowledge that wedding planning is a great time for expressing your appreciation to those that you love. Gifting meaningful things to those people can be such a special part of the wedding planning process, and doing it on a budget is even better.
Exactly. So one of our favorite savvy tools for gifting on a budget is Cricut. So we've partnered with them to help our savvy brides and grooms understand how to create meaningful gifts for all of the people involved in your wedding.
With us today is Natasha Adorable, a marketing manager at Cricut and a self-proclaimed Cricut enthusiast, here to shed some light on why Cricut is the ultimate BFF for any bride on her journey of getting married. Natasha, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here. Excited to talk to you guys.
Yes, we can dive right in. As a Cricut expert, why do you believe using a Cricut machine during wedding planning is such a savvy choice?
I just feel like it's such a savvy choice because it's such a practical tool you can use not only for yourself as the bride, but for anyone that's in your bridal party, for the guests at your wedding. And really, like, you can keep using it after wedding too, which is, I think, the most practical part of it.
Yeah, that's so true. Obviously, you know, this is something that might be a little bit of an investment upfront, but you can use it so much throughout your wedding planning process and beyond for gifts and things like that. So for anyone who's listening who hasn't heard of Cricut before, Natasha, can you tell us the details of what is Cricut and what can brides do with it?
I feel like it's a hard question to answer because you can really make anything with it. But essentially, these are smart cutting machines. Depending on what model of machine you have, it can cut 50 to hundreds of different types of materials. So we have a software that helps you design and personalize things, and then the machine cuts it out. So you can do anything from personalized tote bags to personalized apparel to sticker decals. If you want to, you know, put like welcome to the wedding of Mr. and Mrs. Smith or whoever it is, you can easily customize and make anything, especially for weddings. It's so super useful and practical.
Love it.
Speaking from personal experience, I have tons of friends that have gotten married recently. For one bachelorette party, we actually personalized everyone to have like personalized pajamas, which was kind of fun. You can also do those bridal party proposal boxes. Yeah, those boxes are so cute and fun. And I feel like anytime you get your name on something, people just feel like so special when they see their name on it. And it's like such an easy thing that you can do, but it's like, it just elevates the present just a little bit more. So even just like hangers for the wedding day, different things like that. It's so fun.
I totally agree. And I'm a big proponent of always personalizing with the person's actual name rather than like bridesmaid or maid of honor, yep. Because then they're actually going to use it more so after the wedding day.
Yeah, the personal touch is like something we talk about with weddings just in general. And so the fact that having a Cricut allows you to do this in perpetuity, basically, you know, like you can start with your bridesmaid proposal boxes and just keep going from there. With Cricut, like you can cut so many different materials, so many different things, make anything. You can put it on clothes, you can put it on posters, like you can put it on glass, acrylic. Like there's just so many options. I don't know. I feel like we always talk about like the creator economy is like democratized now in terms of like videos and social media. And I feel like Cricut has like democratized the crafting creator economy because totally. You can do this. It's not like it looks like a home project. It looks so professional.
I know. That's actually one of my favorite things too, is like, I hate saying that's only for crafters because it's really for anyone. Like it's so simple that anyone can figure it out. You can save money and have really cool things at your wedding and really still get professional looking results.
Yeah. I was introduced to Cricut by Jess.
Yes. It's part of our origin story, I would say, which is like so special. Like talk about like bringing people together, right? We're talking about making gifts for people, but you can do Cricut projects with your friends as well, or you know, with like Sari and her sister made some projects for her upcoming wedding.
Yeah, like I gifted it to my sister.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did. She's amazing at all of it. So now we've been using it together for my wedding. So for my bachelorette, she helped me customize. I got like jewelry boxes, like travel jewelry boxes. And so together we kind of like designed a little like emblem that we put everybody's initials in. And
cute.
We did those on each of their jewelry boxes. We also did cute little.
Cute.
Yeah. We made little like, I guess they're like, I don't know, makeup bags, but we put wellness type stuff in them for the bachelorette and gave them out to everybody. And then she also, for my shower, made like a photo booth backdrop type of thing. And so she cut the vinyl to say like Sari's bridal shower and put it on there. And so there's just so many uses to it, but like doing it together has been fun. And then also me being able to gift it to everybody, it feels that much more special.
I love that.
You know, it's so easy to look at the relationships that you have and like during wedding planning being like everything is strained, like everyone has an opinion, things are rough. You know, that's an easy part of wedding planning to recognize. But the other part of it that like is so nice to soak in and bask in is that it's an amazing time just to show your appreciation for everyone, not just for your partner, but like for their parents and their family and their friends and your parents and your family and your friends. And, you know, you're going to be gifted so many things during your wedding, but getting to like reciprocate and getting to give that back, I don't know, that's where it's at.
I really aim for things that are low effort, high impact. And so even like changing a name on a card or something to like put their name on it, like, thank you, my new mother-in-law, or thank you to my wedding planner for doing all these things, and easily being able to design something, but just change the name. And like, it's not that much effort on your side, but the impact is so much higher. And then also the people that help you during your wedding, it's like, oh my gosh, this person helped me with my wedding. Now I want to help them with their wedding or with their baby shower or their, you know, whatever life event or big occasion or event is happening in their life. Like this Cricut tool that you can use over and over again, just like is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah,
it is responsible for the bride to party planner pipeline.
Yeah, I agree.
And what you said really is like the definition of what savvy is all about for us. You know, it's saving time, it's saving money, it's saving stress. There's so many great templates and things that you can customize easily yourself. You don't have to be an artist. You don't have to be a graphic designer. You don't have to be a professional crafter to still get those professional results with this tool. And that's why I love it so, so much.
Yeah, the bang for your buck thing is also really important here, because we always talk about like if you can justify using something in your house after using it at your wedding, then like good, that's a thumbs up, keep it. And not just the machine itself, but like if there's anything you're making, like a sign or a book or like you know, anything, you can essentially, ideally, theoretically swap out whatever you put on it and like make it useful in your home.
Yeah, I've seen like people have taken like mirrors and done like seating charts or like their welcome sign. Is that how you justify buying an Anthropology mirror, is that you put your seating chart there and you're like, okay, I'm gonna use this after the wedding?
You do, but also
love that.
Did you hear about the Costco dupe of that Anthropology mirror?
Oh my gosh, yes.
And it sold out in like seconds in every Costco location.
Yeah.
But yes, if you're wondering how people do that, it's with their Cricut.
Yeah. And then you can just peel it off when you're done, and then you just have a gorgeous mirror.
Yeah. So to get more inspiration, ideas, everything you could want in terms of how to use Cricut for your wedding, they have a dedicated wedding landing page where you can just get a million ideas. Head to Cricut.com. Thank you, Natasha, for joining us.
Thanks so much.
I also think, you know, just not to beat a dead horse, I feel like I could reiterate, like, I feel like I reiterate this all the time, but just getting really clear on, you know, those values and priorities and why you're making the decisions you're making. It's like, it's an expression of your heart at the end of the day, you know, like this celebration that you're putting on, it is a tangible, experiential representation of like your relationship and your love story and all of those things. And so kind of sharing that and the heart of that with those, you know, financial contributors too, mm-hmm. can sometimes help potentially like just make the conversation a lot more smooth.
Yeah. And knowing what's important, and on the flip side of that, what's not important, because then that gives you a good idea of the things that you can give on. Like if there's certain things that you just aren't, that just really aren't important to you, and you're not going to be like offended or impacted really either way of how it goes, like then, you know, okay, like it's fine. Maybe we just go along with what they want for this particular thing because it's not really going to impact us, but we know that it's important to the person who's asking for it.
Absolutely. And if it's important to them, maybe they want to contribute more to make sure that that thing happens or is present or that their wishes are accommodated.
Negotiate based on how much they want it.
Yeah.
That's all a great, you know, great takeaways, great things to think about. So if you had to give your top three pieces of advice to somebody currently planning their wedding, what would they be?
The first one's to get organized because there's so many moving pieces as part of a wedding. I will never forget. I did what any like nerd and lawyer would do when I got engaged, and I went and I bought books and read how to plan a wedding, which actually reminds me, one of your questions was why did I feel like there was a need to write this book? Yeah. And there's every book out there imaginable about the how-tos of a wedding. Like you said, when to send the save the dates out, fun ideas to invite your wedding party to be part of the wedding. There's all of that stuff, but there really isn't anything out there that prepares you for the emotional side of planning a wedding. And that was the hole that I saw. And that's why I wrote the book. So hopefully those people out there who get engaged and feel inclined to do what I did and buy books, that's just a huge piece. Like understanding all of the pieces of it helped me so much because it feels less overwhelming when you can kind of map things out and you can name things and you understand the scope of all of that you're doing. So getting organized is really helpful. I'm going to keep harping on this. We're going to keep beating this one with a dead horse, but the open and honest communication. I am such a firm believer that talking to people and telling people how you're feeling and what your concerns are and what you're having anxiety about, all of that is just so important to having a healthy relationship and having a smoother wedding planning process. Like people can't read your mind. And so if you're upset about something or something's not working, and even too, this policy holds particularly strongly too with your vendors. Like if you're working with a planner and they're not doing everything that you thought they were doing, or the relationship isn't moving along like you thought it was, like you need to have a conversation instead of keeping that to yourself and like letting the resentment build. So that open and honest communication is really important. And then three, it's having those potentially uncomfortable conversations with the stakeholders at the beginning of the process. Like, so one of the examples I alluded to earlier was one of my couples. It was an Indian Jewish fusion wedding, and we booked their venue and we were moving along with planning and had so much booked and like had a sense of like what the day was going to look like. And then one day I get a call from the bride and she's like, we have a problem. Because what they were planning to do, the two of them were not particularly religious. So they were just wanting to kind of craft a ceremony that had nods to certain Indian wedding traditions and nods to certain Jewish wedding traditions. And the bride was the one who was Jewish, and she was planning on wearing a white dress. Well, so she called me that day and she's like, we have a major problem. The groom's mom does not want us doing any Indian traditions while I'm wearing a white dress because white is the color of mourning in India. And so we were like, okay, so maybe she wears a sari for the ceremony and then changes into a white dress for the reception. And then the bride's mom wasn't keen on having like the Jewish elements done while the bride was wearing a sari. And man, we ran through every scenario of what to do and ultimately figured it out. It ultimately led to having two completely separate ceremonies because that was the best option. But the two of them were caught so off guard by the parents' really strong opinions about how this was being done. And so I always say, like, especially like when it comes to religion, when it comes to money and how people are involved, people are expecting to be in your wedding, have those conversations very early on so that you don't get so far down the road and get caught off guard and then have to just completely pivot everything.
A last minute change to two ceremonies doesn't sound like a small thing.
It was not. No, it was a whole to do because we did. So it ended up being we did the Indian ceremony in the morning. So like we had a like kind of like a continental breakfast thing at the venue. Then we did the Bharat and then we did the Indian ceremony. And then we had family. We had formal photos in that attire after that ceremony. Then we had probably like 3-4 hour break. Everybody went back to hotels like full blown hair, makeup, outfit changes, did the Jewish ceremony, and then just had like a sort of like non-denominational reception. So, but yeah, it was a big deal. I mean, we contemplated, it was really funny. One of our options was like having an intermission where there would be an outfit change.
It's like the Eras tour. Just exactly. Like play a video, come back out in a different outfit.
So many costume changes. Obviously, for obvious reasons, we determined that was not going to be the best thing to do. So yeah, we settled on the two ceremonies. But there were other things I would always have, like after that happened, whenever I had clients and we were talking about like religious traditions, either in the ceremony or reception and stuff. And I would always say, make sure to ask your parents if they have thoughts on this. And they would say, oh no, they're not going to care. I'm like, just do me the favor and ask. And then they would ask and they would be like, oh my God, my mom actually felt really strongly that we do X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, yep, I learned from that one time to make sure we ask those questions.
This would actually make a great like tool to give to couples of the list of questions that they should ask their families about their feelings, preferences, opinions, whatever.
Yep.
As it relates to the wedding, just to have all that info up front as yeah. they enter into making the decision.
Yeah. I think it's in the, I think there's a, it's not like in checklist form, but I think I definitely go through like all the conversations the two people getting married need to have. And then some of the more other conversations that the families need to have.
That's so amazing. Growing up in the South, I heard it a lot among my groups of friends as they were getting married, you know, like having family members say, well, what do you mean you don't want to get married in our church? You want to get married in like a field or at a barn? Like, how is that marriage going to be blessed by God if it doesn't take place in a place of worship? You know? So you need to know if your family has those kinds of opinions so mm-hmm. you can try to mitigate any damage caused by going your own way.
So I loved that story and I'm wondering if you have more, and I kind of want to phrase it in like our keep it or toss it type of trope that we use. So are there any things that like you've seen couples do or helped them plan that you would say like embraced this feeling of keeping things that were really important, and then like conversely that embraced the feeling of tossing things that didn't serve them?
Yeah, I think a lot. One of the things that comes to mind has to do with, honestly, with food. So people mm-hmm. feel very strongly with food and how they, what they want and how they want it served. And I know a lot of people like, and again, it goes to, and I love this idea of like, you know, taking care of and like nourishing your guests with food. So sometimes throwing away the traditional menu items or even the traditional format and having like one of my couples, well, the groom was a chef and they had probably the best food at a wedding that I've ever had, but just having, and another couple did this as well, but like having different stations that represent them and sort of their favorite types of food or maybe places that they love to travel and things like that. That's been really fun to see people kind of reimagine, is not having the traditional menu. And then I do think a lot of people keep a lot of tradition with ceremonies because that seems to be one of the more, I don't want to say appreciated, but just sort of like honored of the kind of traditions, is having a lot of traditional flow to ceremonies. And even, and I do like the piece of having the newer piece of having friends or family members be the ones who are officiating and doing the wedding. I really love that, like tossing out the having to have some kind of religious officiant be the one to legally marry them, and being able to have like people who know them and love them. And those are when the really beautiful moments happen.
We agree.
Totes.
So I did. Here's just a quick funny story, really funny story. One couple had their friend marry them, and I was just chatting with them before the wedding, and I was like, "You feeling good? All this?" Like, I said, "Do you need anything like to hold like your iPad or your notes or anything?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm going no notes on this." And I was like, "Oh boy, this is like bold move, but you do what you want to do." And he forgot the ring part of the whole. He got to the whole end of the ceremony, pronounced them married, and like people in the front row were whispering to him, like, "You forgot to do the rings." Yeah. So like, I get having confidence in your ability, but having notes is never a bad thing.
That's like, a rehearsal dinner these days, I feel like, has become a lot of just like not rehearsing and just dinner. But if you're having somebody that hasn't performed a wedding before, rehearsing is definitely helpful for them.
Yes. Yeah, that's a prime example of like the over communicating being so, so important. Oh my goodness. That's wild.
I mean, this is great. Thank you so much for sharing these little tidbits. I know that there's so many more in the book. So can you give everybody listening an idea of where they can find the book, where they can find more about you, etc.?
Absolutely. The book is called The Wedding Roller Coaster. It is available on Amazon, so very easy to find that. I am on Instagram at the Leah Weinberg. Sadly, my wedding planning site exists no more, so I can't give you any wedding content. But should you find yourself in the need for any legal advice, you can find the new firm. It's called Oduberg, so oduberg.com and Oduberg Law on Instagram.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It was so great talking with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Love that.
You've been listening to The Bouquet Toss, brought to you by thebudgetsavvybride.com. For more tips, tricks, hacks, inspiration, and support, check out the links in our show notes. We are a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network. Get more information and check out other shows in the network by visiting evergreenpodcasts.com.